The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to The She Word. Conversations that women rarely have, but really should. Finance is a topic that many of us shy away from. Banking, investments, pensions, insurance, and even tax returns and VAT. And sadly, women are less likely to be financially literate than our male counterparts, which in itself leads to disempowerment. Not only will we be looking at this topic in this show, but we're also going to be looking at women in employment in the financial sector. Worryingly, women do not create wealth at the same rate as men. According to the OECD, women receive 26% less income from the pension system than men. This is from the World Economic Forum only last year. In Malta, the gender pay gap is the highest in the real estate activities, 29.7%, and in financial and insurance activities, 24.3%. Similarly, in the EU member states where data is available, the gender pay gap is higher in the financial and insurance industries. Despite the financial services sector being gender balanced, the gender pay gap is high because more men than women occupy some of the high paid occupations, such as specialized service managers and administrative managers. And because they receive higher wages than women within the same occupational category. However, women are increasingly taking up leadership and executive roles across the financial industry. Women have gradually risen to leadership positions within major insurance companies, which is great news. In the past few decades, more women have taken on executive and board roles in global insurance firms. Female executives are now shaping strategic decisions in areas like underwriting, risk management, and claims, but much more can be achieved. And of course, it's incredibly important that women are in these roles to shape the industry from a women's perspective. So we're going to be looking at the work-life balance and how women can achieve more through financial freedom. I am so excited for this show. This topic of women and financial literacy and financial empowerment has been requested so many times by you SheWorders. And so we're going to sit down today and talk about this with three amazing women. First of all, Romina Farrugia, thank you so much for being here. You are the deputy head within Insurance and Pensions Supervision Team at the Malta Financial Services Authority, and you've been with the MFSA for more than 10 years, but you're also an expert in financial analysis and overseeing all passporting notifications. I'm going to ask you what that is in just a minute. But you're also a certified accountant and a mother of two young teens. Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you at the table. Andrea Sarafa, thank you also for being here, a lawyer by profession and holds the position of deputy head within the Insurance and Pensions Supervision Team at the MFSA, the Malta Financial Services Authority. You're a legal expert in charge of overseeing changes to legislation, regulations, and transpositions for the insurance sector in Malta. I mean, that's a massive title. Again, I might have to ask you a little bit of detail about that. Sure. But you're also a proud mother of three.
Yes.
I love this because we've got two women at the table who are managing these really powerful positions, but also have attention to their family as well. But it's an absolute honor to have Petra Helkema at the table as well. Petra, you are the chairperson of the European Insurance and Occupational Pensions Authority. It's so lovely to have you here. You've been leading the authority since September 2021 with a rich heritage in financial advisory positions at European level and situated. When I was researching, when I was stalking you, you've been all over Europe. That's amazing. So we're really glad that you can be with us here at the table in Malta. Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested, so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full, because nothing should stop you, period. I'm going to stick with you for 1 second, Petra, a little bit more about yourself, because I gave you a really, really brief overview, but you've obviously got a passion for the financial industry.
I do, and maybe I even have a passion for my own financial independence. I think that is where it started. I still have this little book from when I was 9 years old, where I started to register my income. And I would even like note like 5 cents found on the street.
Wow.
And I would add that to my capital. And at that moment, my family made fun of it. But I think it gave me also a sense of being in control of knowing what I have, but and then building my independence. And so I do have something with finance for sure. Did not know I would end up then at the European level and in insurance, but career paths develop. But I think in the end, if I look at the red line or the trend in my career, it's about working with different people, a curiosity to different cultures and what binds us and therefore languages, and an interest in the other, which I think ultimately does bring you to an EU job. Because if you want to do this job well, it's actually about listening and an interest in others, and in my case, in the financial world.
Well, I love that. And I love that little story that you started with, because I think for a lot of us, and certainly for myself, the whole idea of even managing around our own finances, we sort of navigate it with some trepidation and even going into that as a sector. And I mean, I'm saying from my personal point of view, and I know because I've had a lot of women through the show tell me this, that finances and managing your finances is really quite terrifying. And of course, it's where a lot of empowerment comes from. And I'm sure as a 9-year-old, being able to write down that you found 5 cents, it's empowering. It's empowering because you're in control of yourself. You're in control of one of the most important aspects of us as human beings, but also as women. So we're going to, I love you. And I must say, thank you for coming so beautifully and brightly dressed. Thank you, Petra, for being here. I'm just going to ask you, Romina, for a few more details of what you do, because there were some really amazing terms popped in there. So what do you do on a really basic kind of understandable level?
Okay. Basically, my role within the insurance and pension supervision team at the MFSA is to authorize new insurance undertakings, to look into passporting notification.
You ask what is what that? What is that?
Basically, it is when companies which set up in Malta or insurance undertakings setting up in Malta want to carry out business within the EU.
Okay. Ah, okay. All right.
So that's a passporting notification. You're passporting out of the country. And likewise, EU companies wanting to ride business in Malta, to carry out business in Malta. That's passporting in. So that's passporting in a nutshell.
Now I can understand that. And for you, a little bit more detail. What do you do? Because you use some technical terms there for your description.
So basically, my role is to transpose legislation. So
whoa. Okay.
So what that means is the EU issues legislation, and when they are directives, such as the one that has been just issued a few months ago, at the beginning of January, we insert it in our law. We transpose it. That's the word that we use. We use the word transpose. So in insurance, for example, you have the act, the regulations and the rules, and you ascertain, you try to find the best position where to put that particular legislation in those areas. And then we consult. We have a lot of consultation with the industry as well. Sometimes we do webinars, and sometimes we also conduct podcasts. It depends on the exigencies. So that's one part of the job. Then there are some questionnaires. There's discussions with the markets, queries from the market, et cetera, et cetera. Anything with to do with insurance and pensions legislation, come to me.
Can I help a bit here?
Yes, please, okay. Petra. These ladies, did you see my face then?
These ladies do a very important job, and it's very much behind the scenes. People will not know, but what people do know is they buy an insurance. And so you buy an insurance for your car, and if your car breaks down, you get money from your insurer, and they pay, and then you don't have a problem, because it's if you get the money and you can afford the repair. In the same way, if you buy a product that you want to save for retirement, when you retire, you get that money. That's how it should work. Now, what if it doesn't work that way? That's the question. And this is where our roles come in as supervisors. Behind the scenes, there are actually a lot of rules for these insurers that make sure that what they promise you is true, and that they can actually pay for it when they need to. So we check the promise. Is it true? Is it really a good promise? We also check if it's really a good product. And we also check that you have the money to actually pay that out when the customer needs it. Plus, if they don't, you can also come us and we act. And so these two roles are essential. I would say that you are the gatekeeper of our market, because before an insurance can start, either here or if they can start here, they can sell in Europe. She actually checks if they can, because if they can't, they don't get access to our market. She's a strong woman at the gate of those products, making sure that only the good guys get to sell in Europe. And we do that on the basis of rules, which need to be in law, and we agree on that as Europe, but then they have to be translated into the national markets. There's Andrea.
I just want to say thank you so much, because I immediately, Petra, I get the feeling that you understand that I am a fish so far out of my own water that, because this is not an industry that we understand, but we all buy insurance. Yeah. And some of us later in life are looking to get involved in pensions as well, and also investments and so on. So I'm going to tell you, again, I've been having conversations recently with female friends, and we're just like, oh my word, we better start thinking about the future. I'm not a spring chicken, and I can tell you I'm really late to the game. But it is really important. And most of us, thank you for so much for describing these roles. Most of us don't have a clue. Don't have a clue. We just assume if something happens, we're going to get a payout. Okay. But I'm going to just reference as a side story, when we had hailstorms, do you remember when we had hailstorm here? Yeah. And we had mine was one of the cars that got absolutely annihilated by these golf ball and hailstones, and the insurance, whether or not they were going to pay out or not, was really questionable. Yep. And thankfully they did. But is when you were saying, I was like, oh, the good guys who are actually, look, we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about us as women and where we sit within financial literacy. But let's start off, because Petra, you have wonderfully explained how important these roles are. So we're going to start off with women in the workplace in the financial sectors. And female leaders have often had to fight against stereotypes, let alone women working in finance. I mean, immediately when we talk about finance, I do think of sort of, what is it, the walls of Wall Street and these sorts of things. You know, we think of men, don't we? It's been for years a male-dominated sector. Today, we still fight against the perception that men are better at financial analysis, which you've just blown out of the water. And know-how with colleagues and other people at meetings underestimating our knowledge and insight. And I will just say that, Petra, when you said women are so good at financing for children, isn't that so often what our motivation is? Because we don't see our own value. We underestimate the importance of ourselves. So I want to just ask, first of all, if anyone is interested in this, we've got three amazing women, but does this stereotyping boil down to workplace culture? Or is it more widespread than this? Where does this stereotyping come from? Let's blow that out of the water first.
I think it is there are differences per member state in culture. So it's very cultural driven. And I think there's two things. There's the way we organize care and career. Be a care for parents, which is going to be more and more important with living on an aging continent, and care for children. And what is then the expectation of society on who does what? And what does it mean for finance? That's the one end. And on the other end, it's also culture on how a family organizes its finance. And so, just going back to the country that I'm from, the Netherlands, if you look at who organizes the finance, then you see that already 200, 300 years ago, with the Dutch being overseas, there became laws that if husband didn't come home, the woman could still be in control of the finance. So we have an earlier culture where, not that everyone does it, but there was a notion that also women then could continue with the business, which was an exception in law because mostly it would go to the first male in line to inherit.
This is amazing.
It is. Yeah. So this has been around for several hundred years simply because of the circumstance.
Yeah, and the fact that husbands sometimes did not come home from the travels. And then the question rose, but who then gets to continue the business? And we have some strong examples of women. Now, across the board, I think that also in the Netherlands, there's still women who leave it to husband, but there are other cultures where that is much stronger. So that is the one thing. On the who does the care, I think in the Netherlands, it's an example where the expectation is that he works full time when babies come and she starts working 3 days. Anything beyond 3 days as a woman at any party, at any marketplace, you do have to explain yourself. The expectation is part time.
Ah, yeah. Oh my word, I've got Romina here like going, yes.
No, because the thing is, I think we need to move away from this kind of stereotyping that it is the woman who has to cut down on her career when you have kids, when you have a family. I think it needs to be more of a family decision where you together decide what is best for your family. And if it's best for the husband to be the main carer, then it's acceptable. That's acceptable too. I think it needs to be your choice rather than the choice of society,
And I think it's also important to share the burden. So, I mean, the burden as a family. Family is not a burden, but you have to share the responsibilities. The responsibilities, you are both parents, both yourself and your husband or your partner or whoever. So it's important that any responsibilities are shared as much as possible. Now, maybe it's not always a 50-50. Sometimes it's a 60-40. Sometimes it's a 40 and sometimes it's less. But I think it's very important for even the male counterparts, our husbands, our partners, to pitch in anything that's happening at home. It's not just work, but they can pitch in taking care of the kids.
Yeah.
Why not? They can pitch in and taking care of anything that's going on in the house, not just maintenance. And that's important, I guess. Eh? It would give us even more freedom to be able to pursue further our career. So we need to spend some time at work, yes. But then after work, sometimes you'd need to spend that extra hour.
But you use this essential word career. And Petra mentioned something about what the culture in the Netherlands. And that was that it was recognized that the men were away at sea and that the women needed to manage the finances of the home. Now, that's a circumstantial cultural shift. Mm. And something that happened post-war is that there was a circumstantial cultural shift. Yeah. Because pre the Second World War, there was no such thing as a woman having a career. There was women working, but not having a career. And now the shift that came specifically from the circumstances of the Second World War mean that women are career driven and they do have careers and we are proving ourselves. But we have, what you ladies have just said, is a massive cultural shift, particularly for us here in Malta.
Yep.
Yeah. Will we not agree? I mean,
Yes,
in Malta, I think usually what happens is that the husband goes out to work and then the woman stays at home or else has a job but is not maybe full time, etc., etc. But I think in order to be able to pursue a career, it's important that you have to spend the hours at work, maybe not full time, if that's possible for you, because it makes things easier at home, obviously. But if it's a reduced hour job, for example, that sometimes helps out with the family obligations, maybe.
But even there, I think as well, from my experience, COVID was a horrible time for everyone. Yes. But post-COVID, I think it helped because we learned, well, I think all countries learned that flexibility works, yeah. that you can be as effective from home as you can be from the office. We shifted to one day, I mean, we were all at the office. The next day, we had to yeah. work from home remotely, all of us, all 400, whatever employees we are. And we managed.
Yes.
We managed to do even more. Yeah. Because people were actually grateful that we could actually do it. We could actually work. We were not losing our jobs to COVID. We had the facilities to work from home. And luckily, that shift continued even post-COVID. At least where I work, we were given the opportunity to have remote working. So we have a number of hours per month which we can where we can work remotely. And that has helped incredibly.
For sure.
Yes, but you still use the term helping out.
Yeah, I like that. Can I?
Because I saw you and we were like, oi, helping out there.
How do we appeal to men here? And this is it. I once had a boss, a female boss, and I was in the middle of something, but I was also was pregnant. And I said, I'm actually pregnant. And she says, if the company can't cope with those 4 months, they're not well organized. And that's it. I think for businesses, the maternity part, the leave, is something you just have to manage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the reality of society that we can't lay an egg. We actually need some time to produce babies. So that is one. Second, for a family, I can fully appreciate, because I was there 3 times, that it is really jungle hours. I mean, it's physically, it's changing. It's changing for mom, for dad. So there's a lot happening. And maybe in that moment, with everything that comes on your agenda and you need to do, you need time with either of the two partners to manage that. But what is so important is that you keep a long-term perspective. A short-term break is not per se a bad thing to cope with the load in a short period. But by the time the kids go to school, and they can go to school about 3 or 4 years old already more peace comes into the family. This is where you can go definitely back to both developing your career. Economically, and this is really true, it will help the family because you have two careers you can lean on. If one goes bad, the other one still stands. You have two pensions that will cover for you later on. You have two networks that will help you also to keep employed both. So there's so many reasons why if you want to take care of the family, the focus is often on how we're going to take care of the kids mm-hmm. in being there for them. But you also need to provide financially. And why would the man have to do that on their own?
In my experience, my mother used to work. So for us, it was not something new. That's what was expected. Not what was expected. That can be done. It's something that can be done. And that opportunity, the fact that you know that you can do it, I think it's also liberating as well, because it makes you feel that you can do
it. But then it has to be joined, because when you do that, also for in my culture, you will get a lot of questions because I don't work 3 days a week. I work more and my husband also works. So and that goes back to your question about the culture.
Yeah.
Because even if you are brave enough, but if you stand for that quietly and you really support each other in that, because I think a good marriage is that you are more proud of the development your partner is making than your own. That is what works.
This is perfect because you're leading us right into that career. You mentioned careers. You talked about two careers and not jobs. You talked about two careers in the family and you've just mentioned a career again. And I really want to dive into this because I think one of the things that puts women off, whether they are, I don't have a family and my cultural background, as I've mentioned before, I'm extremely privileged that I had a lot of positive influences on me. And I've never thought to myself, I can't do something, simply because of the culture that I grew up in. It had a powerful impact on me. But I want to dive into this area because I think for a lot of women, already, if they are family makers, if that's one of the things that they want to do, they're already kind of bearing that in mind. So let's look at women in the workplace and women in careers. And I want to come straight to you, Petra, because you've worked full time. You have this role. You've had these amazing roles right across Europe. Have you ever really faced challenges, particularly because we're in the financial sector, and I want to bring it back to that. Have you faced challenges about being, you mentioned about these questions and these, and probably criticisms, and I'll come to you ladies in a minute. But have you had questions ever doubting what you do, why you do it, the fact that there's a woman doing it, and should you be at home and all the rest of that as well?
All the time.
You serious?
Yeah, and I just grow. I've learned to live with it, but I did not always work full time. In fact, when I had my daughter and when my first son was born, I was at home. I had my own company because I thought that was helpful because I was taking care of the kids, so that had the priority. So I did a bit of advisory and translation, but not a lot. But then it started to not feel good. I really missed the work. I missed to grow. I missed to really be out there with colleagues. It's one thing to do it on your own. So I looked for a job and I got the job, and I started, of course, part-time. So I started to work 28 hours and I felt so guilty. I wasn't there. But I also felt guilty about work because I wasn't there.
That's
the problem. But I felt the energy of the job. So I slowly moved to 32 and then I went to 34 and finally I went to full-time. And my husband said, "You're so much more fun when you're working."
Because you're happy.
I'm happy. I was happy. Now, the good part maybe is that because I had these 4 years at home, being a home stay-at-home mom, I also realized that some of the things that you look at are overrated, in the sense that, yes, it is really nice to bring your kids to all their hobbies, but it's also get your coat on, get in the car. Oh, it's raining. Okay, you get wet. I'll get something for you to dry up. I mean, there's a lot. And we had good carekeepers and nannies, if they can help you with that and you actually get to do very good meetings or just learn a lot, then actually in the end of the day, you're happier. Big advice, if you have someone at home that takes care of the kids, ask them to feed them before you come home. Because if you come home and still have to cook, kids unhappy, hungry, hangry. Mom still in her job, still has to cook, busy. Alternatively, come home, fat children, happy children, and you don't have to cook. So I think it's these small things that can make it work. Do I then no longer feel guilty? I do. I mean, I'm sometimes not there for my kids. The other day, last week, there was a birthday and couldn't be there. But then by now they're teenagers. They say, "Mom, I mean, seriously, I'm sorry you're not there, but I do think it's a bigger problem for you than for me, actually."
It's true. I can't really say that.
Yeah. And it's true. As they grow, it becomes easier. I have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, and it's already much easier than it was when they were younger. Because ultimately, I have two girls, and I make it a point to teach them, like I was taught. My parents had one goal. They wanted us, me and my sister, to get a degree, to be financially independent, and to make our choices ultimately, not be dependent on anyone else financially, because obviously when you're in a marriage, then you're dependent, but it's the support you get, it's your choice, not because you need to be dependent on someone. And that is what I tell my daughters: study, get your own degree, make your own life, and then make your own choices.
And it's also important for the boys. I have three boys, 10, 8, and 11 months, 10 months. My youngest is 10 months old. I think it's important to teach them that the wife can go to work and everything will work out. Is it easy? For sure, it's not easy. But it's because everyone has to pitch in. So they see their father pitch in. They see their father. It's not a pitching in. It's a shared responsibility, which I think that is important. The husband is not babysitting the kids.
No.
He's actually taking care of them. Because
being the father.
Exactly. He is being the father. And I think it's important for the younger generation also to see that and to
absolutely
teach them that that is important, especially boys.
Well, I'm going to jump on that because you absolutely hit the nail on the head that we need to educate.
Yep.
We need to educate. But I'm going to ask you to reframe your thought for a second, because you said it's important for the young boys
yep
to see that the wife goes to work. Now, we might be having people listen to this show who are not wives. They're not
yeah
mothers. And I want to reframe that thought to focus on why women need to go to work and why women go to work in the financial sector. I mean, I have in my head, the more women that we have in let's say, for instance, as a parallel, the more women we have in AI, working in AI, means that we have more of a gender balance in AI. We know, if anybody knows anything about AI, that right now we have a significant gender balanced bias towards men in AI in the way that it's scripted and written, and the, obviously, therefore, the results. Without the gender balance, every time you're going onto a search engine or something that's pushed by AI, then we're going to have a gender bias towards men in the outcome. So we as women need to step up if we want to have equality, and in this case of this conversation, within the financial sector. So I want to reframe that thought away from being a wife and into a woman. And I want to come back and move away from us stepping up. We've got three amazingly powerful and incredibly inspiring women at the table who've managed the home, the work balance, the criticism, and the obviously the commitment to the children. But I want to take that now into the work environment, because we think of for the financial sector and we think of it being a male-oriented industry. So I want to ask again to you ladies, have you ever come up against barriers? Let's start with you, Petra, because you've had a very, very wonderful and wide career. But have you ever come up against male opposition? Because you're in leadership. You ladies are in leadership. Has there ever been that?
Well, if I must say, like concretely, like an incident that happened, never. But I think that is exactly the problem, that you don't, that there is literally something like, but you are a woman. But But it's little things that are said that if you start to look out for it, they are there. It's a situation where you note that actually hardly anyone, also in the central bank in the Netherlands at some point, actually was a woman in the management teams. And this is also where women all need to step in, but we need the men too. And fortunately, several men at the top also said that needs to change. So there was an agenda where we really pushed for more diversity in management teams. And that for sure also helped to get those women in. But the next thing is that you do not adjust, but you remain yourself. Again, that is not easy. And if you would have seen me in the beginning of my 30s, I was wearing my hair very tight in a knot. And I was wearing black dresses always. I had many different black dresses. There was a point, and it was after the birth of my last son, and I had some difficulty getting back. I was an older mom. It was more difficult. I felt pressure. There was competition for jobs, and it took me a while to get back on it. And I could have maybe had more support for that, but I think there was an implicit thinking in the organization that is the third child. She probably won't go for management anymore. It was never sad, but I once they realized that was not the case, I got the full support, but implicitly that thinking was there, and it was difficult for me to address it. But I also think it was difficult for my bosses to address it, because do you feel comfortable asking a woman, are you still up for it? And I think you should be. But by the time we had that conversation and then I wanted to move, I got full support. And if it wasn't for these men in my job, I wouldn't be here. So it's men and female that need to do it, but you need to talk to each other. And I wear collars, I color my nails, and I stay who I am. And that is what you have to do in your presence, because then you bring diversity, but also in your comments. And a great example is that I was in a management team meeting, and we looked for a new project leader, and there was one other lady, and then there was a lot of guys. And someone said, but what about her? And then someone else said, I'm not sure. I mean, she just returned from her maternity leave. I don't think she's up for it. And then the other lady said to me, Petra, did you hear that? Did he say that out loud just now, or was it me? And I just said, I think he said that out loud. He really did that. And then we just both looked at the guys, and she got the job. And so I think you could also have responded by, you should not say that, that's bad. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes it's better to just raise those implicit things to the spotlight, because I do think that there are many men who will then also step in and say, oh, I didn't look at it that way, but I'm happy to look at it differently.
You're yapping away there.
No, because it's true. I mean,
what you just said, Petra. Sorry, I'm just.
It's totally, totally true. I don't think it's about gender. Ultimately, you're either a good leader, a good career person, or you're not. Yes, women bring a lot to the table. They bring compassion, they bring empathy, and that's important for a team to thrive at the end of the day, because what happens in our position, I'm as good as my team. If my team is not thriving, I will not perform. But likewise, it's not about gender, because you can get empathy and compassion from a man as well, from a male leader, and I got that. Maybe in a more subtle manner, not as open as a woman, but you still get it. And sometimes the problem is that us women can be our own enemies.
Yes, for sure.
We really need to support each other, because sometimes we do not.
That's for sure. I think that's important. We were talking about this the other day. In fact, you can have really great women bosses and you can have really great men bosses. I think it's important for a leader to be able to understand what's going on. If for you it's important that today your son is sick and you need to go with him, he needs to go to hospital, and you have that important meeting that no one else can attend. I mean, it has to happen. Something has to happen. Something has to give. Even this balance thing, I think it's priorities rather than balance at the certain point in time. If your son is so sick that he needs to go to hospital, you can't not go with him, because it's a really important thing. He's sick. He needs you. He'd want you. Now, okay, can the husband go? Of course, when that happens, we usually both go. So we both leave. Both myself and my husband would need to go to hospital. And that's why it's important to have a leader who will say, yes, of course, what's important is your family. Go and take care of your family. And I think we are very lucky in that respect as well, that we have leaders who can understand what we're going through. And they say, go and take care of your family, because that's what's important right now, because they are sick. Like, that meeting can be moved to another meeting, if not someone else will step in. And that is very important, I think.
But don't you think, I'm going to throw this onto the table for a second. We've identified that there is a dynamic shift in culture that is gender related, and it's happened across the world, but it's particularly happening in Europe, probably started in Northern Europe, and now we're seeing this here in the southern part of Europe as more frequently. And that is the shift that we're coming to a position where both genders are equally contributing to society. But as you just said, and you just said, sometimes we're our own worst enemies. Mm. And we use dialogue and we use terminology, like you were saying about your husband helping you. It's not your husband helping you. It is if we are equal, we should not be using that dialogue. Yeah. We need to start with ourselves as women, because we need representation in these sectors, such as finance. We need the representation not just to be seen in the sector, but to make the choices that are then going to affect women and men. For instance, some of the with all due respect, some of the legislation and laws relating to finance and roles here in Malta are still, I'm going to use the word, archaic, and they need to be addressed. They are so out of date, for instance, with the tax law, but everybody who knows me knows that I'm horrified about this right now. But even if we're in a workplace, you know, we do know that women are often referred to as bossy, when we'd like to be referred to as assertive. We as women need to stop using those terms on ourselves on the women around us. Yeah. And we need to create those subtle cultural shifts, because we aren't going anywhere.
Yeah. And maybe one of the important things we need to remember is that they don't have to like you. They need to respect you.
That's good.
Ooh. And that is very important, how you position yourself. We start from the family. That's where the women came in. We also need to care. But by now, it's so much more. It's care and career. If you are a woman without children, but you have parents, we live on an aging continent. Many, many elderly people will retire, but then they will also get older. When you are older, you have more health problems. we are up for a major challenge with elderly people that need to be taken care of. But you also, I just had a colleague I work with excellently the last 2 days in Brussels, and her cat was really doing not well. I mean, if you care for the employee, and yes, this is our most valuable asset, you care for her being able to take care of that cat. So it is about care and career. So maybe through the angle of we need to take care of our family, a certain consciousness of flexibility, and I really believe in flexible workplace and work hours, came into the workplace also to make it happen, that you combine tasks, but it goes way beyond the care of children. Why is it important? We need women in many ways. If you take it up, and I'm going to go to the macroeconomic level, if you look at the problems we are facing in the EU, we have this healthcare problem coming up. With more elderly, you will have more people who need care. Solution, women will take care of it. They'll take care of the parents. Great. We have a problem with the pension gap because...
Sorry, my face has just gone, what?
No, I'm just, let me go because it's getting more, better. Let's say, yeah. Because we have a problem with the pensions in the long term, not today, but with less people working, state pensions will be more challenged. So we will need to save, and please start at a young age. That's when you start saving for your pensions. We need to do that together, but we also need then to make sure that we have that savings where we need women as well. But we maybe also, as some countries say, we need more children. Oh, we need to produce those. Finally, we actually have a productivity gap. If you look at the macro level, we have a productivity gap. We need to work more hours. What if women start to work more? Yeah. So I hear women solving a lot of the problems. I do push back on that. I said, I'm really happy that you count so much on us, but we can't do everything. But if you give us flexible hours, flexible workplaces, and help us build also the workplace in a way that we can afford, we maybe can contribute. But at the macro level, women are an essential part of the labor force in the EU that will need to carry EU through the phase that we are going through at the moment. It's essential. On the workplace, we need them too, because it's not just that there's hands. We are 50-50 almost at the starting levels, but we're not at the top. And the tone at the top on how we facilitate diversity, an open eye, which starts again from women, but then goes to all kinds of diversity in age, in profession, in cultural background, that opens the door for all that diversity that we need in an economy that is in transformation.
Again, I'm looking at you ladies, and I'm still jaw dropped there for a second because suddenly I'm realizing how much of a role we have. But you ladies were nodding away. I mean, particularly Ramini, you're like yesing to everything.
The truth is that at least even in our workplace, if we're given flexibility, it's not just females, it's males and females. So it's not a given that the female has to work more from home as opposed to a male. So you try to balance things even when implementing such initiatives.
Of course.
So to normalize the fact that it's not necessarily the
and
woman.
Well, that flexibility is important as well. Flexibility can also be in your working hours as well. So our job allows us to be able to work less hours than 40 hours. You can work 30 hours, you can work 20 hours, as you mentioned, Petra. You start a bit by bit, and then you increase. But in those 30 hours, I realized once I went in back from maternity, I do as much as a full-timer.
Because
I work so hard, so much, I don't get a break, so that I'll be able to work even during the break, so that I can, because I haven't done enough. Sometimes I tell, I'm going back home and I'll try and do some extra work because I don't think I did enough today. And actually then when you really see what you've done in a 30-hour job, the job of a full-timer, if not even more, because you try to condense so much work to be able to like push off and make sure that you reach your own deadlines and make sure that the project is actually out, because obviously projects sometimes end up as being kids. So when they're out, it's like you're giving birth to a project that you like feel that project is yours. So you want to finish it, you want to finalize it. And the only way to do that is to work more. But that's why flexibility is so important.
for all, because there will also be men who have parents, and or maybe there's just brothers that don't have a sister to lean on, and they still have to take care of parents. So it needs to be a joint effort, and from a cultural perspective, that you need to discuss that. But frankly, if you look at me and my husband, when we go somewhere, he drives. When you ask him, he takes care of me and he helps me with my career. If you ask me, I'm very happy with his support. There may be still some unbalance in there, but we are totally fine with that. So I don't think it has to impact on your relationship when you proudly together carry a family and a career. Yeah. And I think, and outside of that also, I mean, my sisters take care of my dad. I'm really grateful for men doing that.
I love what you just said there about the driving, because my husband loves to drive and he'll always take the keys unless we need to get somewhere fast, in which he'll give me the keys and he'll say, right, we're going in the Abarth and you can drive, dear. But coming back to something that I want to touch on something that you just said, because I want to look at financial literacy for a second and shift this conversation around for a moment. But Petra said something that's really important. We've talked about flexible working. We've talked about women being back in the workplace. We've talked about the challenge of women, but also the need for women to be in the workplace, whether you're a mother, whether you're not, whether you're coming back from maternity leave or like me, you've worked all your life. We have a role and we have to continue with that role. But I want to come to this idea of financial literacy, because you touched right there on the changing shift. Not only are we having a changing shift of gender, but we're also having a changing shift of age. We're living longer, we're having an aging population. You mentioned about pensions. I hadn't even thought about this. And I think for a lot of us women, we kind of just say, oh, well, look, I'm going to speak from my own position. I'm always like thinking that I'm still 25 and I'll get there. I'll think about it when I get to 50. I am 50 and I'm still not thinking about it. So, but it's one of those things that we potentially don't think about. And we had a conversation before we sat down and we talked about there being a gender bias towards the men looking after the financials of the home, which is great. Unless something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's what we said. We said exactly that. It's great unless something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And now the divorce rate in Malta, as it is, there's been statistically a divorce a day since the divorce law came in, statistically. Well, but we're finding that people are separating. And we're finding that not only that, women, young women, powerful young women are staying single longer, but perhaps not benefiting from financial literacy. And so I want to touch on this for a second, because financial industry, financial literacy, it does have, in our minds, a gender bias towards men. So I want to, on a very simple level, if you ladies were to say, okay, my passion is that all women are financially literate, what does that mean? Give that to me in real basic terms.
Okay, shall I give it a go?
Yeah.
Okay. Our Queen Maxima of the Netherlands is also the United Nations advisor for financial inclusion. And she has a bureau in the United Nations and they call it financial health. And what is the definition of financial health? First of all, it's literacy. It's that you need to understand your finance. And if anyone who watches this goes home and says, can also be a boy, but goes home and says, I actually need to understand what is my income, what do I actually spend, how much is left of that at the end of the month, and what do I do with that? That simple question, look out for it and do it. Just do it. The second thing is that you also understand that you are resilient to shocks. What do we mean? Mm-hmm. If your washing machine breaks down, if your car breaks down, it's like a short-term problem, but that comes with a cost of between 0 and 4,000 euro. Can you deal with it? Maybe through an insurance, maybe through savings. Have you thought about that? And then it is, besides understanding and knowing what to do and dealing with short-term shocks, am I confident that I can live well in the future? Essential question. 1 in 5 Europeans is at serious danger of living in poverty in old age. 35% more risk for women to that. And in general, women will earn 30% less pension at the moment. It's not good. So financial health is about that you understand it, and that is not just learning finance, but it's actually looking into it and then also looking a bit forward. Can I deal with some events? Mm-hmm. So financial health is important for any individual that wants to be economically independent, and it's essential. Even if you are not married and you can't get divorced, you need to know about your finance. You need to deal with shocks. You need to be confident about your future. If you are not, because you don't know, then you need to find out. And there are many ways to do so, including on your website of the MFSA. There is information on how to understand that. There are financial advisors that can help you as well. So there's a lot out there in material.
Sorry, I want to come back to that because I'm always very keen to pick up on important things. I'm understanding about the importance of financial health, and I'm thinking, oh my word, where do I go? You just said there are people out there to help you.
Yeah, so there are, I think it starts from, are you comfortable with, you know, just doing math and adding up numbers? And do you have, but if you don't, most banks these days do provide apps where you can see how much you spent and how much is your income. And that already gives a picture. So, or you do it at home. And I've done that for a long time. I just note at the end of the month, I have my receipts. I note how much did I spend on groceries? How much did I spend on rent? How much did I spend on my kids? And if you do that only for 6 months, if you can make yourself do it for 6 months, you will see a pattern. And then you know, okay, this is my spending pattern. This is my income. How much is left of that? Second step, about, and depends on which where you are. In the Netherlands, we say about between 0 and 2,000 would be good to have in case your washing machine breaks down or your has something important in house breaks down and you need to fix it, that you have that on a savings account. For the longer term, are you saving for your retirement? If you still can save something. And you can think that maybe €5 is not a lot. But if you are younger and you are able to put €5 into a good product, this is where supervisors come in also to check. But then in 40 years' time, that will give you some additional money to the state pension. But it starts with your willingness to think. And if you go to a website of, for example, the MFSA, you will find financial inclusion, or how do you call that at your website?
Financial literacy.
But or you go to our website, iopa.europa.eu. And if you go there, we actually list per member state the websites where you can go to find information to start having an idea of where you are with your finance. And you need to do that because it will make you feel more in control and therefore more happy once you've done it.
We're going to put all of those links underneath. So if you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening to this on Spotify, go to the description underneath this show and you'll find all of those links right under here. Thank you. I'm going to come to Romina in a second because she looks really excited. But I want to say, Petra, something you just said there that really challenged me personally. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And I can promise you, I have navigated through my finances in the way that a ship might navigate stormy seas with a few icebergs thrown in as well. And the icebergs being those unexpected financial burdens that we describe. But you said, do it for 6 months. Just do it for 6 months. And I feel like I'm going to take up this challenge. I might make it, I'm going to lower it to just 3 months. And then I'll drop you a line if I make it to 6 months. But that idea of just starting with something,
yeah,
just starting with the €5, just starting with writing down your expenditure and your income, and you guys having resources that we can use to be able to assist us, for us who didn't learn about these things at school. Again, one of the frequently asked questions for the She Word is, why is my child learning trigonometry and long division at school, which, for if that's your career path, that's incredibly interesting. I can promise you, I've never used trigonometry, and I wish I'd learnt accountancy and I'd been encouraged to do that at school level as well. But you were, again, Romina, I keep seeing you out the corner of my eye. You were going, yes.
No, because it's true. I mean, we learn so not useless subjects, I don't put it that way. but
what subjects were useless?
I am an accountant, so I've studied accounts, economics, financial management, so that is my area. But yes, especially in the early years, you tend to study a lot of... But then it helps you also to it wires your brain to think ultimately, because that is why you use trigonometry and stuff that you mentioned. But yes, it would be ideal if we could teach more of this financial literacy in school, starting from a very young age, so that it's ingrained in our
That's it.
Our children. Part of you.
Yeah. Yes.
You need to actually manage your own finances when you
And I think it's also important for the children to know the value of money, because even at a young age, they're always asking for stuff that if they have something at school that teaches them, like, listen, let's do this exercise that you mentioned for a few days, wherein we learn the value of the money. So someone gives you an amount of money every month, and then you see what you'd like to do with it. So I have one son who's always spending money, who loves just, if he has a 10 euro, he'll do whatever he wants. Just go and finds online and looks for stuff and finds something to buy. The second one then, no, he saves the money. He doesn't always spend it. If I give him money for a bake sale, for example, he doesn't spend it all. He leaves a bit on the side for next time. So he's already, even the idea, if someone teaches you, listen, you need to think a little bit about it, it will be more ingrained even in you, in yourself. And it will make your life easier, because that would be the exercise that you're doing for life.
It's a basic life skill at the end of the day.
Do kids still get pocket money associated with tasks?
I think it depends, because that's a very slippery slope.
My mum used to get me to do all of the ironing. Sorry, mum. But she used to get me all to do all the ironing for about 5p. borderline slave labor. But it did teach me the value of task-related reward, which was financial. I would go straight down to the shop and spend the 5p on sweets, obviously. But I love this idea of being able to be advised to teach generations about, from a very early age, about financial health. I like this financial health. This is really cool.
It goes beyond the literacy. Because it really goes to using that literacy to understand where you are and, if necessary, take action. And the 6 months, or if you can make it 3 months, and I look forward to your email.
Challenge accepted. Anyone with me?
but it really helps to give you insight, and it also can give you like a comfortable insight. Like if you spend a lot, then you think, "Oh, I spend a lot," but you look like if it's on restaurants or if it's on presents for poor people, then you also will know that if next month is a worse month, you can just eat at home. Huh? So there's flexibility in your spending.
You can adjust
if you spend a lot, but it's on fixed costs that you will have to. Then you're earning too little. So it's things that I think a lot of this as women is common sense once you see it.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of just putting it in a row, because once it's in a row, I think the multitude of women will be perfectly able to understand what they're looking at. And repeat that exercise if you don't make it like after the 6 months or 3 months, but do repeat it when you have a life-changing event. And one of my life-changing events was, of course, when I married my husband. And then I went anew through all our finances, and then I informed my husband that he was actually not insured for really a lot. and then he said, "Oh, really? I wasn't aware." And I said, "But now you are, and you will be insured from now on." So it also is good to look after that, because and in the same way, I don't really believe in having tasks for a kid to have the pocket money, because part of the money should be a little money, but at young age should be there to just spend as you like. A kid can better go broke or have a debt that you need to really talk about and don't do that again when it's 40 euro than when it's 4,000 later on. So let them have it at a young age and they will learn.
Yeah. And in fact, children tend to spend your money,
exactly,
but not their money.
That's true.
When receiving of their money, it remains there. Shall I use it, Mom?
Yeah.
Yes, you can use it. Can't we use yours?
Yeah. And I can just talk, meet your kids. I love that. But I also like this whole idea of this, you know, moving into it. Even, and I am going to take up this challenge, because even at my age, I think for anybody who is listening or watching the show, I think it's important not just to focus on what's happening with kids, because there is never too late. I mean, I have to say this because I'm a newlywed, relative newlywed, and me and my husband for Valentine's, we decided what we were going to do is go and get a pension together. I know, and open bank accounts together and this sort of thing, romantic that we are. But it's never too late. It's never too late to take up Petra's challenge, never too late to get the advice from you guys, and never too late to bring this around and turn it around, because let's face it, we can't reverse it, but we can improve the future.
Yes, and you still have many years to work. So,
yeah. Oh Lord, oh, do I?
I think so. No, so, but thinking, and I think so far the best planning example, I saw that even I was not aware of that would be possible. So this young lady from London City amazed me. She actually told me that when she and her husband got married, in her prenup, they agreed on a monthly amount he would pay her for all the months she would be out having babies.
That's so very clever.
That's the max that I've seen. But I do think that they at least had a very good discussion about the loss of value of that period. Yeah. And they found a way together to solve that.
I love that.
Wow, because during those months when you're on maternity leave and maybe during after, because here in Malta we have those 4 months that are paid 3 by the employer and 1 by the state. And then we are lucky, we can take a little bit more because our jobs allow it. But in those months when you are unpaid, then you have to see where you're going to get the money. Either you save it from before, so you'll have to think about it so you know that you're pregnant and you save, or else you have to see where you're going to get it.
For sure. I mean, this is one of the big reasons that we need to be sitting down and having these conversations about financial health and pre-planning and so on and so forth. Because I also love what you said, Petra, what you've all said, but I'm going to pick on Petra for a second. But you mentioned about the washing machine breaking down. And I'm sat there, when you were saying that, I was sitting there thinking to myself, do I have financial backup if our washing machine breaks down? I think probably not. Mm. And it does cause an insane amount of anxiety. And then, of course, the knock-on effect of that is that it lowers the quality of life for that period. Mm-hmm. And we as women take that upon ourselves to feel the guilt, the responsibility, what can we do, et cetera, et cetera. I want to come full circle because I know this isn't...
Can I just do one more thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so because otherwise I don't think we do right to maybe those who do look at their finance and already have stress because finance does not look good, or who have somehow ended up in debt and they are actually already very anxious about that.
Which is can I just add in, a very high percentage, a very, very high percentage. I want to just put this on the table that whilst I'm sitting with three ladies who are exemplary in regards to financial health, for the rest of us, it is not only frightening, but we're probably not sitting in the best places.
And the thing is that, and you triggered it with the word anxiety, because what you see in this lot of research is that families and individuals who are indebted or don't know how to deal with all the bills that are coming in, and that happens a lot. We've just gone or still in a cost of living crisis. People have seen prices go up, energy prices go up. How do you deal with that? And the anxiety in those families is impacting all their decisions, and it has a general negative spiral on how they like their job, how they feel as a person, how stressed they are. So it has a huge impact. What we also see is that coming out and actually talking about the fact that you have a financial concern or problem, or maybe debt, is very difficult. There's a lot of shame in it. Mm. But I think particularly women will know it's there. Again, there's a lot of projects and ways or organizations where you can go to who will look with you on what is your real situation? How bad is it really? Maybe even jointly open the envelopes you didn't want to open anymore. And and then help you to organize, but also these, they can also help you sometimes even negotiate with those with whom you are indebted, to see how you can restructure. And that's a difficult word, but it just means that you try to either pay less or you pay it in time, but to find a way to get you out of that situation into a more healthy situation. And every time you wait longer, you'll just have more stress. And there is attention for that. And there are people that can help you. But the shame and the blame on yourself is enormous. But the best thing you can do is try to find help. Talk to a family member, talk to a friend you trust, go online and find those organizations that can help you.
And I'm so glad you touched on that, Petra. I really, really am. One of the most empowering revelations, one of the most empowering podcasts that I recently listened to, have you ever heard of Mel Robbins? Mel Robbins is the number one podcaster in the world. She's just released a book called Let Them, and it's gone to the best-selling top in most English-speaking countries. And she talks about on an interview on one of the podcasts that she was in when she was being asked about her journey. She found herself at one point in $800,000 of debt. $800,000 of debt. And because of that, she started working with events. She started then doing public speaking. And that is where her journey started, rising her to being one of the best in the world. We have an amazing, inspiring woman as the top podcaster in the whole entire world who just talks about her journey. And I want to really use that opportunity to inspire women. Maybe it's not on that scale. It's not likely to be on that scale, but maybe, you know, that's the extreme situation. Nearly $1 million in debt, going to being an extremely successful woman. And she talks about the 18 years that it's taken her to go from this place to this place, but she did it. And I think it's worth inspiring everybody who's listening and watching this podcast that it's possible, as you've just said, with the right guidance, with the right methodology, with the right practice, just stepping up and dealing with that shame, because it's not a shameful place. Mm-hmm. We are so often in these positions, and the only reason that we hide it in shame is because we don't talk about it.
That's true.
Because nobody wants to say, you know what, I'm overdrawn.
Yeah.
Or I'm having a problem meeting my mortgage payments. But every single person has stood in those shoes, no matter who you are.
True. And that's why you need to take responsibility for it. Everyone needs to take responsibility for his own finances, because that's how you gain control.
Her finances. You said his finances. I know.
Your finances. His or her finances. Okay, so. No, I'm married, so basically we manage our finances together. He's an accountant too, so we don't really, it's a kind of, we mingle all our pays together, and it's we use as a family, so it's a family finances. But it's important that I know, that we both know what we're investing in, measures we're taking to for pensions. So it's important to take these decisions together, because you need to know what's happening ultimately to the finances which are available within your particular family. So it's not good to let your husband take all the decisions, for instance.
Even you need to know, like going abroad, for example,
what's happening.
It's a big decision as well. That's a lot of money spent. It's important that
major expenses as well.
Exactly. You need renovating your house. It's something that you have to decide together. But even the investments, I think, because even those are important. It's important to know if your husband is investing in something particular, especially when you have a pot that you share.
Yeah.
Because as we were mentioning, when things are okay, everything is fine. But when things go wrong, then, I mean, it's important to know about everything that's going on.
And just touching on that for a second, that the financial stress is one of the major reasons for breakup for marriages and problems within marriages and relationships. And not just marriages, but relationships as well. I'm going to ask you guys, I know this is insane. I could sit here and talk to you for another 2 or 3 hours, but I feel really inspired by what you've said. And I want to close by asking you 2 questions in turn. So I'm going to ask both of you, all of you, these 2 questions. I want to start off by asking you to inspire. What would you say in conclusion to the discussion we've had about taking on a mindfulness for your financial health? What would you say to any woman, a young woman who wants to one day have her own home. And she's not looking at relationships. She's not in a relationship. A young mum who's thinking about, you know, how am I going to manage the finances of her house, her home, or somebody who's maybe moved on in their life journey and they're looking at themselves. What would you say to them to inspire and give them the empowerment to address their financial health?
A tough question.
I know, I'm going to ask it to each of the ladies, but you're going first.
Okay. So I think what I would tell them would be to start with the exercise Petra has told us about. I think it's a very important starting point. That's when you will know how your finances are, where you're spending most of your money, what needs to change, if it needs to change, to prepare for that cushion. I mean, I loved what you said about that, to have a cushion. And then you can also go through the next stage where if you want to spend more money going abroad or doing all these beautiful things, then you can go there as well. I think you have to work hard. That's for sure. I think for me, it's very important to work hard in anything you do. And to have faith and to be happy.
I think they're working hard is the frightening bit. Romina, same question to you.
Okay. No, basically, you need to, first of all, work hard to be able to earn a sufficient amount of money, to be able to live a good life, basically. Know what you're earning and know what you can spend. Because many times these days, we're exposed to a lot of through social media, through a lot of information of things you'd want to do, but you need to first of all understand what you can do and look at your own finances and not overdo it. So if you can't afford it, you do not do it. That is very important. Because ultimately it's you need to look at yourself and not at others, because others may have different priorities, different income.
That's not so easy these days when we have so many influences. Yes, but it's
essential and it's key.
Absolutely.
For example, I can take the example when I got married. You're preparing for the wedding. It's a major expense. It's a very big expense. But the first thing we did, we sat down and we set a budget, because you can go sky high. But this is what I can afford to be able to continue renovating the house, have a honeymoon. So you need to set your own budget and you need to understand what that budget is and not go overboard, because that's the recipe for.
So you're
for
saying
disaster.
You need to, and looking directly at me, and now I'm terrified.
No, just everyone.
I wanted to ask you to come to close that first question, to inspire and empower women to proactively take care of their financial health.
I think in a time where we can be feeling guilty about anything, because we are women and we should be perfect, shouldn't we? Drop the perfect, accept the guilt, and realize that if you are in control of your finance, if you can take care of yourself, you have an independence that gives you a position to actually make the choices you want in a world that wants to make you to choose everything or nothing. So being financially independent by knowing where you are financially will give you a stand in the world that allows you to make your own choices, even if influences, family, culture, whatever tells you what to do. And that gives you the possibility to become who you want to be.
All right. This is my closing question, ladies. I just could sit here for hours. And I'm going to come back to you again and ask you, for anybody who's thinking about going into an industry that is traditionally seen as a male gender bias, who may experience challenges with regards to their family commitments and so on, how would you inspire women to go into the industry that you're in? What is good about the industry and why would anyone go into that industry?
Well, in insurance, you never stop learning, both in insurance and pensions, which is why I've been working at MFSA for over 10 years. And it's why it's always exciting and exhilarating, but sometimes also exhausting at the same time. But I guess any job is. So that's the first thing why I think you would want to go for a career. Also because it makes you happy. That's one important point you mentioned. if you are, for example, working from home all the time, working at home and working at the home, because that is also a job, and you want to, you're not feeling yourself, you're not feeling happy about it, but you want to start a career, start that career because you are able, you are capable, and you can do it. It's not just because you are a woman, you can't. You can. You just go there and crush the boundaries because you're capable. You're able.
I love that, crushing the boundaries. I love that. That's a great little nugget we'll take away for yourself.
Well, it's continuing on what Andrea has said, basically, that there is no gender. You're a woman and you can do anything you want to do, whether it's finance, whether it's engineering, whether it's medical, whatever you want to do, you can do it as long as you work hard for it. Same as a male at the end of the day.
Of course.
So go. You have your dream, you work for it, and you achieve it. If we've done it, anyone can do it.
Petra, I want to come to you. You are not just a woman in finance and the financial sector. You are a leader. You're a woman in leading others across Europe. And I want to ask you the same question. Inspire me, inspire anyone who's listening to this or watching this and empower them to really go for what you've been able to achieve.
Yeah, so I would say start with a job, but build a career, because that is in the end where you can learn, where you can discover, where you can thrive and contribute. And contributing, you can do very much in the financial world and particularly in our insurance world. Insurance is about managing risks for society. It's about looking out of the window when you work and seeing people on the street who are not worried, will my pension pay out? Will my insurance cover? Because we are doing that for these people. We help to make sure they have those products, they understand them, and they can thrive in their life because some of the risks are covered. I really feel that if there was one job that was purposeful, it is working in finance, and it is working definitely if more women are on board, because we need to address 50% of the female society as well. We very much need it. We need to care for society. We can do that. So with us on board, I think we can do even a better job. But moreover, start a job and build your career. It's a long-term journey that will really give you a lot of good energy and pride.
And that is the last word. Thank you very, very much indeed, ladies.